you're a California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. I am your host, Phil. As always, with me, my trusty co-host, the best and fastest researcher in the West, Camille. Camille, how are you doing tonight? I know these are your favorite type of episodes. You text me how much you hate me when I make you sit through Newsom interviews.
I didn't tell you how much, just that I hate you.
Yeah, you just said, I hate you.
We're doing another one.
Look, you were the one who brought up that he already did another one with Dana Bash on CNN. So it looks like you're seeking them out. I didn't even know that was happening. So you brought this on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. No, anyway, I'm well. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Before we get the show started, we were talking on the pre-show. Big announcement is that next Friday, for the first time ever, it's official. We can finally announce it. We will be live. Going on the road, first time ever, California Underground, going on the road live at the California GOP convention. There's going to be a whole bunch of presidential candidates, a whole bunch of other, obviously, California candidates and politicians will be going there as well. It's going to be a very crazy convention, and we're lucky enough to have a table basically right in the eye of the storm. We're going to be live streaming for probably about 3 hours, see how many people can get on. It seems like a long time, but I feel like by the time we get people scheduled on the show, it's going to go by pretty quickly. So I'm very excited about it. Are you looking forward to it?
I'm so excited. Yes. It's like Christmas. It's going to be so fun.
It's definitely going to be different.
We were at the last convention together and we, you know, we had a little bit of drama, not you and I drama, but other people trying to start drama.
Other people. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see, I mean, I know genuinely people like our podcast. I know a lot of people respect our podcast. That's probably one reason we were able to get this opportunity is because people like and respect our podcast. But that's not true of everybody. And there's probably going to be some people at the convention who will not be happy that we have a table right in the middle of everything. And we're going to be live streaming. So, and to them, I say, I don't care. So if you care that much, you get a table and do what we need to, what we're doing. So, but that'll be next week. We'll give you more details. We're trying to line up different people to hop on, speakers, maybe 5-10 minutes if they can spare some time, hop on the podcast. And who knows, maybe they'll just be special people walking by and being like, hey, can I hop on the podcast that we know? We'll be like, sure, grab a seat. There's an extra microphone. That's the whole point of this. So,
yeah. So if you're listening and you're a candidate, or a current politician running again, or you could be a current politician who just wants to come chat with us, reach out. We want to talk to you.
CaliforniaUnderground@protonmail.com. Email us and be like, hey, I want to be on your 3-hour podcast for 10 minutes or so. We'll be like, great. Let us know when you can make it and we'll fill it up. I put Camille in charge of all that stuff because she's basically running the podcast at this point. I just show up and smile and try to look pretty.
Absolutely. So.
But without further ado, should we dive into Gavin Newsom doing, I guess this was Chuck Todd's last show on Meet the Press. Mm-hmm. It was a big deal that he did this interview with Chuck Todd. I am not sad that Chuck Todd is gone. Are you sad Chuck Todd is no longer on TV? He's no longer doing Meet the Press.
You know, all these people can do what they want. Like, who are we to gatekeep of who can do this and who can't? But so one thing I'm continuously disappointed in is that these big shows, they just sit there and answer soft questions. And then when the interviewee doesn't really answer the question and kind of beats around the bush with the question, they'll be like, oh, I understand, or absolutely. And they like sit there and just agree with them and then move on to the next thing. And I'm like, no, pound them, ask the hard questions and get the answers out of them, or make them like, you know, sweat and be like, I don't want to answer that. But don't just be like, oh, okay, we'll just move on and like, love your shirt, nice hair.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah. And this was definitely, I mean, he has some tough questions. He pushed a little bit. on the COVID stuff. He pushed a little bit, but I watched through the whole thing. The last third of it was basically like just two gals chatting away, just giggling and laughing like two little schoolgirls. Like, what do you oh got my god! Like, so you love doing this and you love doing that, and oh my gosh, you're so amazing as governor.
Is that how women are? Is that how girls are?
I imagine that's schoolgirls gabbing away, just having a grand old time. No offense to schoolgirls, comparing him to Gavin Newsom and Chuck Todd. But yeah, the softball questions at the end, by the time I got there, I was like, he's just giving him softball questions and ending on a fluffy note. So with that said, we'll just dive right in and we'll kind of pause and give our feedback and fact checks as we go along. And if you're in the chat, let us know your feelings about what's happening, and away we go. Let's do this.
Good to be back. Good to be with you.
I appreciate it. Let me start. It was about a year ago where, right after the Dobbs decision, you very publicly, and I'll quote you, like, where's my party? Yeah. Where's the Democratic Party? Yeah. We're a year later. Do you have that same sort of lack of focus and leadership that you, do you sense it nationally?
The opposite. I think we're on message. We're getting back on the offense. We're on our feet. I think demonstrably that proved itself, not just asserting it on the basis of what happened in the midterms. We outperformed, I think, our own quiet expectations, certainly punditry that was out there at the time. No, I think the party is in a much better place than it was back then. But I stand by what I said a year and a half ago. Out of stress and frustration, I expressed not only that point of view, I tried to do something about it through the iteration of doing ads in other states and making a case.
You think things are better, in your opinion, because the party did something better, or simply the public is just pushing back on this abortion decision and that is motivating voters?
The abortion decision's obviously been galvanizing in that respect, and it's demonstrably so. I mean, you saw with Ohio and what just happened. You're seeing it play out in large and small venues, including the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So look, it's obviously played an outsized role, but I think we're getting our feet under us. I think focus on democracy and freedom, taking back the mantra of freedom, not submitting to the other side that they own patriotism. The president's developing his message and strategy, and we have.
Do you think, and this is this may be a little hot take right off the bat, do you think people on the right and Republicans, after the Dobbs decision came down, should have just been like, that's it, issue decided, here we go, that's it, we've ended Roe v. Wade, let's not push our luck on it? Or do you think they kind of overplayed their hands in some states that created an issue for Democrats? Like, they're continuing to fuel the narrative so that it galvanizes Democrats to show up to vote.
Right. I see what you're saying. I agree. They jumped right in as opposed to like taking a breather and being like, okay, let's see how this plays out. Let's see what we need to do. And of course, I'm pro-life, but you and I both agree these things should be left up to the states. Mm-hmm. And the states certainly took it and ran with it very quickly, which then we know Gavin Newsom / California reacted right back. And now we've passed all these crazy bills that were funding all these abortions for out of state, as well as their travel, things we as California, the state, cannot even afford. And so there was, you know, reactions on both sides to the reactions. And I think everyone just jumped in too fast.
Yeah, I think it should, you know, you're giving the Democrats too much fuel with the abortion issue right now. And I think after Roe v. Wade was struck down by the Supreme Court, they should have just said, well, it's a state's issue now. That's exactly how we wanted it. And that's the end of it. And that's how Republicans should have ended that and then let the states decide. But it's definitely something Democrats are hanging on to politically as a talking point. It does galvanize, and it still galvanized people. So probably even more so now, because they said the Supreme Court is taking away your reproductive rights and all of that stuff. As opposed to, you know, here in California, right. I think we talked about this on the podcast when it did happen. We were like, it will literally make no difference here in California. If anything, it'll just it'll go to California and we can make our own laws and it'll be just as radical as before. So it doesn't change anything here in California. Even though people here in California thought that somehow it would change their reproductive rights, but I digress. Let's see what else he has to say.
Do you feel like you see it? I mean, do you feel like you know what the second term agenda is?
I don't know about the second term agenda because we're still regaling in the extraordinary success.
The Biden administration. We don't have time to think about the second term because we're just so giddy about the success of the Biden administration right now. Inflation never been higher. Check that off. Historic inflation, check mark. Historic gas prices, check mark. Historic unemployment, check mark. Historic amount of people working multiple jobs, check mark. Historic housing prices, check mark. Just records all over the place. Regaling in the success of the Biden administration.
I wish I could say that in this interview that was the worst answer Gavin gave, but I feel like it gets worse.
It gets a lot worse.
We'll get to that, but can we talk about how we've like caused everyone to go into debt over Ukraine? Like this administration will not stop giving money to Ukraine. We don't have. It's not even like our tax dollars anymore. It's literally just like we're just like inventing money to just send. Like this money does not exist anymore, and we're like, here you go.
No, and Maui. Meanwhile, in Maui, they're like, here's a check for $700. We're too busy fighting a war in Ukraine. We can't help rebuild Maui. I mean, the amount of money they've given Ukraine, they could have rebuilt everybody in Maui's house just the way it was, given them, you know, paid for it all out of, and would have had plenty left over. But no, Maui, here's $700, and hopefully BlackRock and Oprah Winfrey don't buy up all your land and kick you out.
In all fairness, though, that is like almost a year's worth of ice cream scoops for each person that received the $700. And that, you know, that's probably how Biden counts things, is like, how much ice cream can this get me?
$700 is a lot of ice cream.
It's a lot. It's like if you like think about it, like $2 per scoop, one a day, that gets you almost a like daily for a year.
Oh, we're talking about like if you go get ice. I was thinking like if you go to the store and get ice cream, that's a lot of ice cream. I mean, it depends. Well, are you getting like Blue Bunny or Breyers? Like it depends on the brand.
Don't want to be insensitive, but they don't have like freezers anymore to keep it in. So,
yeah, that's true.
Moving on. Sorry, that got way off topic.
But which we now get to apply.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, but you know, successful administration.
Successful administration. They're just regaling, and he brings up my favorite quote that he always says about the Biden administration is it's a masterclass. Masterclass.
So tired of hearing that.
It's a masterclass in
politics. Masterclass
in
what not to do, for sure.
The principles and advance a lot of what has been asserted, meaning make real the commitments we've made through these landmark legislative packages. But beyond that, I think the fundamental messaging has improved. The organize framework that the ads that they've put out, the last five ads, I think have been spot on.
What ads?
And now we've got to go out and campaign. And I think you're going to see that.
I guess the ads from his campaign for what's his pack? Campaign for Democracy or something?
Yes.
Democracy campaign, Democracy for Democracy.
He's talking about his own ads.
Okay. Yeah, the ads he put out. Yep.
Okay. You think only 24% of Americans want to see Biden run again?
To me, the polls mean nothing until we get out there and we make our case. And we got to make our case. We got to focus on the issues and then obviously framework of contrast.
You're well aware of how perception can become reality. Why perception do you think this perception is there?
I'll leave it to more objective minds. I don't have that point of view. I'm very inspired by
masterclass.
The last 2.5 years. And I mean it. I mean
masterclass. Take a
in
shot.
In terms of delivering results. And the results are demonstrable. The question you're asking is the challenging one, is how do we mind the gap between performance, the substance and the results, and that perception before it becomes reality. Clearly, it's reflected situationally in these polls, but that's the opportunity, the not the burden, the opportunity of being able to run on this record and to make the case to the American people.
I think you even said this. Well, I think it was about a different part, but word solid. He just said a lot of words and I don't know what he said.
Yeah, he's very good at that. And I will give him this. I've always said this. Do not underestimate Gavin Newsom. He is a shrewd politician. He's very good at what he does. And if anything, you know, Republicans could probably learn a thing or two about how he interviews, because he's very good at taking really bad negatives and just moving you away from that into his talking points. And that's just shrewd. That's just being a shrewd politician. But it is a lot of word salad when you listen to it. If you don't have googly eyes and rose-colored glasses and, you know, you think everything Democrats do is fantastic and wonderful, you do kind of watch this and go, I have no idea what the heck you just said, which is probably why when you and I watch these interviews, our head hurts afterwards, because we're like, we watch this and I have no idea what he said. It was a whole bunch of gobbledygook.
You actually had to watch it several times.
But he does do a very good job of pivoting. That's his whole thing. He does a very good job at pivoting away from the negatives. Like Chuck Todd's like, why do you think 24% of Americans don't think he should run again? And then he's like, here's some gobbledygook about how great Democrats are. And, you know, it's a masterclass in what he's doing.
The people over the next 18 months.
Do you think this is all just due to age? People just look at the age issue and just think he's not vibrant.
That wasn't even on my mind.
I'm not saying it's on your mind.
In a way that, frankly, we haven't in the past, and we need surround sound. We need to organize bottom up, not just top down. We can't just rely on the president to. In terms of how we approach our role and responsibility at promoting that record.
You did this tour over spring break with your kids of the South, went to some red states. I recommend that civil rights tour in Alabama to anybody.
Changed my life.
It is a remarkable journey to take when you walk.
Republicans should do that tour. Maybe learn a little of their history. Learn about convict leasing. Learn about second slavery. Learn about a little bit of their own history. This nation, not just within their own states. They may even want to discover the guy who used to live here, Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon.
This is one part that I sat there and went, what?
He goes,
Republicans should do this civil rights tour and learn about their history. I'm sitting here going, it was Republicans who were segregating schools in the South? Are we sure about that, Newsom? Do we want to make sure we get our facts straight that it wasn't Republicans in the South who were segregating schools by race and forcing people to get off lunch counters because they weren't supposed to sit there or go sit at the back of the bus? That wasn't Republicans, as far as I remember. If anything, he probably should say Democrats should take this and learn their history and what they did in the South during the civil rights era, during Jim Crow, and during all of this. Because I'm sitting here going, I don't think any Republicans had anything to do with any of that stuff that brought about civil rights and the civil rights marches. I'm pretty sure they were all Southern Democrats. Or is he just admitting that Republicans actually helped civil rights, like Eisenhower helped desegregate schools by sending troops in? Does he want to recognize that history? I'm just confused as to what history he's talking about that Republicans had a role in civil rights in the South at that time.
Yeah, I'm also confused. And to that point, why does he have to keep making this a party issue? You know, we need leaders that actually can unite us, and he just wants to sit here, and this is of course not the first time that he says something negative about Republicans, and he's you know, this is the supposed fourth largest economy. We'll get to that. But work on uniting us. You do have Republicans in your state, Newsom.
Yeah, actually, so, don't isn't it like there's the most registered Republicans in California or more than any other state?
Yes. So. Percentage wise, obviously, we're smaller than the Democrats. We're outnumbered big time by the Democrats in California. But I had heard that we have the most Republican registers. Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah. And he does talk a lot about throughout it that, you know, we should get past this partisan stuff and we should sit down and talk. And but at the same time, he's also throws a lot of vitriol and acid at Republicans throughout the whole thing. But yeah, that was one part I sat here. I was like, what history are you referring to, Newsom? Because I don't know what Republicans did that was so horrific during the civil rights era. Democrats, I mean, we could go through that, but that's not the point of today's podcast. So
it was a profound and consequential trip.
It's interesting you say that. You look at that trip and it made you think nicely of Nixon and Reagan. Why?
Just makes me think that we've lost. I'm just dumbfounded when I think about the Republican Party.
I just noticed, are those surfboards in the background?
From Reagan, Reaganism, Reaganomics in some respects. How different the party
is. I don't know.
Today. I mean, the idea.
I just know, again, it looks
right,
like.
Right after, he's endangered species slamming Republicans again.
The EPA in Nixon. The fact that the modern environmental movement in many respects started with Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
In 1989, he was out there promoting Reagan, assault weapons ban. He was defending the LGBT community. Forget what he did on HIV and AIDS, but he said infamously around the Briggs Initiative, which was a precursor to Don't Say Gay Bill that we know so much about in Florida. He said, you can't catch gay like you can measles. Imagine a Republican saying that today. They've fallen so far from that history, yet they tried so desperately to lay claim to it. And they'll certainly be doing that on September 27th at the Republican Presidential Library.
Which I know you're going to be President Biden's, I guess, chief surrogate. At that
time. We've made our feelings on the Ronald Reagan issue pretty clear. I think it was just an episode or two ago. I'm sure he would love for Republicans to just cling to Reagan for the rest of eternity and become more and more irrelevant. So that's obviously the benefit to Newsom, is that if Republicans just cling to Reagan forever and no one, like you said, I think you brought up a really good point about your son turning 18 this year or next year, and he's going to be voting. Like, to Reagan, to him, Reagan is like ancient history. He's like Abraham Lincoln. So to keep making it all about Reagan and Nixon, forget it. Nixon might as well be like, you know, he came across with Christopher Columbus. He sailed the ocean blue. That's how old he is.
I need to take my kids to the Nixon Library. 5 minutes away.
yeah, no excuse there. I haven't been to either the Nixon or the Reagan Library, although a lot of people say I should go check out one of them.
That's what I keep reading about. I'm waiting to get the official
order. Oh, you haven't been asked yet. You have read that this is you. You don't know.
Also, I love that they do all these interviews in the governor's mansion in Sacramento. Newsom and his family and the first partner don't live in the governor's mansion because it's beneath them. I will bring this up every single time because I think people need to know what an elitist he is that he did not want to live in the governor's mansion because it was not up to their standards. So they went and bought a house for $4 million in cash in the richest suburb of Sacramento, 45 minutes away from work. So they're creating more pollution. Which they rail against, because how many SUVs have to bring Newsom and then the first partner to work every day? And they may not travel together. So what if they have different convoys? So 45 minutes both away.
Security for that time.
They got security for that time when they could live in the governor's mansion and walk to work. So obviously Newsom doesn't care about the climate that much when it comes to, should I live in a place where I create no carbon emissions and I can walk to work that's paid for by, you know, paid for by the taxpayers, or should I just buy a $4 million house with cash? Don't ask where I got $4 million in cash, being a public servant my whole life. That's not the point.
Do you think he has a housing allowance? It's actually a serious question. I wonder if they give him a housing allowance.
Ooh, I don't know. Do they get a housing? Well, they probably get the people who would be working at the governor's mansion, I guess, work for him now at his house. So like any chefs or anything like that. would now work at his house.
I assume so.
But now they have to drive them 45 minutes away. So more carbon emissions. Anyway.
Hasn't been formalized yet. I can't say anything until this goes formalized. It may be speculation.
Fair enough. I will go down that road. But I'm going back to that trip. What did you learn about the perception of the California that the South sees, right? And I'm a Floridian, and I was interested in what the chairman of the Florida Democratic Party said about your visit. Hey, we don't mind the help, but don't compare Florida and California. We're different, and that's okay. Meaning, like, she was a little nervous that your politics was going to define her politics, and she didn't want that. What'd you learn about that?
I didn't hear that or read that when I was out there meeting with Democratic leaders, meeting with legislative leaders in every one of these states. I was hearing the opposite. Thank you for focusing on us. Thank you for coming out here. Thank you for doing what we needed to be doing.
So
more.
All of these state chairs, you think were?
I don't know about all the state chairs. The folks I met with, the folks on the ground, the legislative leaders who said, you know what, Democratic Party, and this is not an indictment of the current Democratic Party, frankly, have taken us for granted. I mean, these were legislative. The Democratic Party was in power in 2010 in most of those states legislatively. And we act like it was 1950s or 30s or 40s. And we've turned the page on those states. So as a Democrat, I was out there to make the case. We need to invest in time and energy in these states. We need to make our case in Democratic values. We're not selling California. We're selling Democratic values.
Are you going to be, there's three governor's races in the, and two in the.
We'll say this again. For those listening or watching, don't shut it. Don't shut off the feed and don't end this podcast right now. I'm just saying this because the truth hurts sometimes. What Gavin Newsom is saying is what Republicans should be doing in California. There should be prominent Republicans coming to California. If they want to help turn things around, they should be coming to California, meeting on the ground with people, talking about how they can funnel resources to the people who need it, and talk about flipping state seats and state legislatures. I think credit where credit is due, Newsom's going into the belly of the beast in places like Florida, which is very red by now, talking with Democrats on the ground and going, what do you need to help flip seats? Let's work on that.
Right.
Republicans have written off California and don't want to talk about it.
Right.
So
and we get that all the time. Like every time you post something, people are attacking you about it's a waste of time. California's lost. Move on.
Well, and like I don't blame those people because as much as they probably wanted to stay in California and they left California, I don't blame them. If you had to leave California for your family and you got a better job and you want to do that, I never blame people for that. But also a big part of that is probably it feels like there's no help coming. The cavalry is not coming to California. And there's something to be said about Gavin Newsom going into these deep red states, talking with Democratic leaders on the ground, state legislatures and stuff like that, and saying, what can we do to help change things from the bottom up? So, you know,
and
credit
he started that pack.
And he started that pack. So credit where credit is due. He's doing something to put Republicans on defense in deep red states. Now, if only Republicans could organize and do the same thing here in California, it might be worth it to push back here in California, put the Democrats on defense here in California and figure out how to organize. So I'm just going to say that. And hopefully people are still watching. It looks like people are still watching based on the numbers. People haven't shut the stream off. So thank you. But
I'm leaving.
Camille's leaving. She's signing off. It'll just be me for the rest of the episode. But yeah, credit where credit is due. And I've always said this, don't underestimate Newsom. He's a shrewd politician. And Republicans can learn a thing or two about going on offense and changing the narrative. So,
doing the Deep South wanted a border state, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi.
Yep.
Have any of them asked you to campaign?
I'm deeply involved in all of them.
Are you going to campaign any of them?
I've been out there fundraising. We've been supporting those efforts. We've been in constant and close contact with with those candidates. And to the extent they want me physically out there, I'll come out. If they don't, I won't. But bottom line is we've been deeply involved. That's why we created this PAC. And we're supporting not just gubernatorial races, legislative races, as well as mayoral races.
You seem to be more in tune. I would argue in tune. Some would say you're too focused on how red America misperceives California and Democratic values, right? This is one of the reasons you want to go out there and defend Democratic values. You feel as if that, what do you think the right gets wrong about California? Not on purpose. I think there's some stuff they do just on purpose. What do you think they get wrong about California that's actually an understandable misconception?
Well, I don't have to travel to get that, the contrast.
Go to Central Valley.
Yeah, I mean, California is larger than 21 state populations combined.
What a snide comment. Just go to Central.
I know.
Just go to Central Valley and talk to those backwoods hicks out there in Central Valley.
You know where all of our food comes from. And
yeah, you know, we're like hardworking Californians who actually like break a sweat for a job and, you know, don't live in the tech bubble in Silicon Valley. Those people, yeah. Just go to Silicon Valley. Just go to Central Valley. You know, those backwards hicks, if you want to get an idea of what Republicans think of you in California. I'm surprised they didn't say, like, just go up north to State of Jefferson and see what they think of you.
Just put it in perspective. We have more hunting jobs, forestry jobs, more jobs broadly in the agricultural space, the next five states combined. So I don't need to be inspired.
You don't have to go to Alabama to find
exactly.
out?
Exactly.
Okay.
To what the point? I think, look, I spent a great deal of time in Central Valley, Central Coast parts of the state, rural northern parts of the state as well, making a case, listening, learning. One thing I do know is we all want to be respected. We all want to be connected to something larger than ourselves. And none of us want to be talked past or down to. And we live in our own micro cults in some respects, these bubbles that we're living in, where you just have surround sound negativity in some of the networks, and then certainly in the social media and the algorithms. And we're talking past each other. And, you know, my job, our collective job is to understand one another and live together, figure out a way to find the terms of, you know, our ability to live and advance together across our differences.
There was, I want to talk about that actually a second. It was during COVID.
Oh boy.
You were pretty strict with the lockdowns here. And it was
this is where it starts to get juicy. So
this is where I still get triggered.
This is where it gets a little juicy.
Harper's, that sort of was critical of your decisions from this perspective. You found a way to allow the motion picture industry and the sort of the movie industry to get back to work. But you didn't allow people to grieve together at funerals or at churches. And that it sort of, and that this may be why there's such a polarized disconnect. What you prioritize, right? This is this anger between the populace and the elite, supposedly. Here you prioritize this industry, but you know, you were tougher on those that just wanted to go worship. What do you say to that, Chris?
I think there's a lot of humility, and we didn't know what we didn't know. And it was hardly I, it was we. Collectively, I think all of us in terms of our collective wisdom, we've evolved. We didn't know what we didn't know. We're experts in hindsight. We're all geniuses.
But think about what you ended up collectively prioritizing. You're prioritizing an industry, you know, one specific one, but then didn't prioritize maybe ones that whose maybe values you didn't connect with.
Well, I don't think it's a binary. There was iterations within that theme. There was fits and starts. There were regional frameworks
There were regional frameworks for about 3 months until you couldn't stand it anymore and took over and had complete, and the state took over all of the COVID protocols. There was, remember, it was for a while, it was county wide. It was every county was sort of in charge of their own COVID response. And then it got to a point where Newsom stepped in and said, this is actually a great freeze frame for him right now. He kind of looks like Robert De Niro. Then he stepped in and became Emperor Newsom, and he decided he was going to set all the rules and he was going to decide exactly how it was. And yeah, there were fits and starts, mostly because you kept changing the parameters of how we went from, like, how did we know? What was it? Like counties were in red tier, orange tier, green tier. It was like all these different, like green tier was almost impossible to get to because it was like one COVID case per 100,000 or something like that. Like it was fits and starts because you kept changing the rules. But I think Chuck Todd is onto something here where he says, yeah, you shut down churches, which you went to the Supreme Court and lost. It's actually a church here in San Diego, South Bay Pentecostal Church, which took you all the way up to the Supreme Court and you lost, and you had to be forced by the Supreme Court to reopen churches. But then you see the movie industry had no problem reopening and they could be open and have how many people working. Yeah, there was priorities of what got opened and what didn't. And the fact that worship, which is protected in the Constitution, was shut down, but the movie industry, not protected in the Constitution, was allowed to go on, it does look pretty bad. What do you think?
Do you recall the video of the woman who had a restaurant in LA and she set up, like they were told, you know, the tent outdoor structure kind of thing so that people could eat outdoors? And then some Hollywood movie needed her space and she was shut down and they took over her space so that staff could eat out there.
Yep.
If I could just like hound one point about Newsom to anybody and everybody for the rest of his life and beyond and in history, because he's going to be written in history books and it's going to be a complete lie. Like he's going to somehow be the hero of COVID in these history books. Newsom never cared about you, about your family, or about your livelihood. He literally just decided he only cared about his power and he shut you down. He doesn't care about small businesses. He destroyed small businesses. He destroyed the livelihood of people. People are still trying to recover from these massive losses. And of course, we know suicide rates went up and like mental health issues went up and education failed. He did that and he does for years. I mean, what was it? We just allegedly like lifted the orders last year. 3 years, 3 years. There's no hindsight. He had 2 weeks to slow the spread. He had hindsight, 2 weeks, 3 months. He had hindsight. He kept it going, kept it going, kept it going. And I just, especially if you're a Democrat and the fact that you voted for this guy again, I'm sorry. You're an idiot. Like, I hate saying that because we can have difference in politics and you're not an idiot, but voting for this guy, you were an idiot. He destroyed people you knew. Maybe you weren't destroyed. Maybe you weren't hurt because maybe you worked in Hollywood or you were a nurse and, you know, things carried on so great. But this actually just makes me angry to no end. I'm like getting hot talking about this because he's sitting here trying to say, no, this was we and collectively hindsight. And, you know, we did what we knew we could. No, no. People were screaming at you, Newsom. People were telling you, we need to reopen. We need to do this. And sure, there was other people saying, okay, good, shut down. There were sheriffs. I know Riverside and Orange County were like, we're not following these lockdown orders. Go do as you please. Open your businesses. Freaking Nancy Pelosi, his little BFF, was getting her hair done in the salon when we were all told that we weren't allowed to do that. And, you know, on and on and on and on and on. This man does not care about you. Do not vote for this man for president. Do not vote for him for anything. And if you do, go seek help because like there is nothing here. This is nothing. And California is worse off than it was. He needs to go. And yes, I'm angry.
No, rightfully so. I think people need to remember that anger. And I think that video of that lady, like you mentioned, you can go look it up. I think that perfectly sums up the frustration that a lot of small business owners were feeling during COVID, which was, what's going on here? The rules make no sense. They're not consistent. You can't justify it. And his whole, well, you know, it's we, and it's, we didn't know what the science was and we were figuring it out. And it's like, well, why in the moment, even in the moment, why was the science different for the movie industry who had actors and tech and staff and all of that stuff, a crew of 70, 75 people? Why is that science different to allow them to do what they were doing, but a small business was not allowed to do anything? And that's why I think people were really frustrated, was you're applying the rules of science, which is supposed to be objective and it's not supposed to change. COVID didn't care if you were a movie crew or a small restaurant. but you were applying the rules differently. And I think people, that's the frustration. That video sums it up, that people saw right through it, that he was just kind of picking and choosing. And you knew the state of California was picking and choosing the industries that they liked, as opposed to equally across the board. And the fact that churches were shut down, but liquor stores were remained to be open. Like, those were two things that I think people looked at that and went, okay, so we can drink ourselves silly and stay in the house, but if we want to go worship, we can't do that. So
therapists were shut down too. I mean, they were allowed to do online, but I know, I mean, I've talked about it here before with my daughter, who was going through some weird extreme anxiety disorder, not because of COVID. I'm not blaming COVID for that, but she had to do she wasn't speaking, and she was supposed to do these online Zoom meetings with her therapist. And literally, she was 8 at the time. She was doing it like this, and she, not speaking, put her head down and cried for an hour. Mm-hmm. And like, I had to watch my daughter go through that. I guess I could have pulled her off, but we were in this desperate, like, she needs therapy because she's not speaking. You know, she 8 years old and went mute. And I'm sorry for everyone that I called an idiot. You're probably not an idiot, but you need to do a little bit of soul searching.
Yeah. And hopefully people.
I'm like taking off my socks right now.
I hope a lot of people look back who maybe supported all this back during COVID, kind of look back on this and go, I was kind of wrong on all of that. And hopefully more influencers who are on the left start speaking up about this stuff. I had a point I was going to make, but I completely forgot about.
I'm sorry.
And obviously science doesn't apply. Like, when during the whole summer, obviously this point has been made ad nauseum at this point, that protests in name of George Floyd and BLM were obviously science didn't apply. You could amass thousands of people together in Oakland, LA, Beverly Hills, San Francisco, here in San Diego, there were protests. Those were fine. You didn't have to break those up. But if 50 people want to get together in church, not all right. So,
right. And you know, they actually would come out with articles saying, studies show no COVID was passed amongst this protest of 6,000 people or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know how they even traced that, but it was complete and utter BS.
It was.
But, you know, props to, I think it was Awakened Church down here. They just ignored all of it and were like, we're just going to have complete full services. So they were one that kind of put their thumb in the face of, or in the eye of Newsom at that time. All right.
And impacts more broadly defined. There were more industry specific frameworks. All of us went through a process. I mean, there was few states that didn't go on aggressive lockdowns, including Florida.
But Florida was closed down for 1 month. And after, what was it, 1 or 2 months? And then DeSantis said, this is silly. We're going back to normal. Like, they looked at the science. They were looking at the same science and the same data you were. And he decided in 2 months it was okay to reopen. And there wasn't a big difference in numbers COVID-wise. So obviously, I guess DeSantis learned faster than you. Was information just not getting out to California fast enough?
We were behind in the science. But also, he's just deflecting at this point. The question is, you know, why did you prioritize this industry versus this industry? And then he's just like, well, Florida.
Oh, Florida was aggressively locked down too. Okay, but no one aggressively locked down quite like California and as long as California.
I wish he would quit throwing other states in as if that has anything to do with, like, I don't remember who does this, but when they talk about the homeless population, like, oh, well, another state has homeless people. Like, no, that's not relevant to this conversation. We're talking about California.
We'll get to that. There's a fact check on that one. So.
But within the framework of the industry.
Who opened the door? It's what industry got leniency and which ones didn't.
All of it is legitimate in terms of reflection. All of it's legitimate in terms of processing lessons learned. We went through a process. I actually had at Sunnylands, which is the Camp David on the West Coast. Right. We brought together experts across the spectrum, people that supported our efforts, people that opposed them, international experts.
Wait, you got together with people?
3 days really reflecting.
Yeah, weren't you not supposed to get together with people? I thought people
bringing people from other states?
People from other states? What, and international people? Did you check to see if they had COVID before they got here?
What we did right, what we did wrong, we're actually putting out a report as it relates to our own lessons learned. I think this country would do well to advance a similar construct, not through the lens or prisms of an ideology, but through
you think there should be almost like a 9/11 commission on what lessons learned from this pandemic?
There's been versions of that, but they're immediately dismissed within the
prism. Yes, there should be a 9/11 commission on COVID, and most of it will be redacted, and the real truth won't come out. So, not to get off on a 9/11 tangent, but if it's anything like the 9/11 commission, then we won't learn anything about COVID. Everything will seem hunky-dory, and it'll be part of the narrative anyway.
Frame. And right. So I'm at least trying to work across that and in context of all
what
our
is
local,
something you do differently?
I think we would have done everything differently because we understood. We would understand outdoors, as an example.
Class. Nature. You wouldn't have shut schools down. You had to try to figure out how to maybe have outdoor classrooms.
Hold on.
I didn't say like...
No, I still remain in power and do people do what I say, but you know, outdoors.
Hold on.
The nature of the spread early on and understanding the epidemiology of that spread, understanding the spread in the context of how it spread very differently indoors than outdoors is one perfect example of what a lot of us would have done differently, including, again, in states, red states, that shut down their beaches in the early part.
But they didn't stay shut down. That's the moral of the story. They didn't stay shut down, Newsom. They didn't stay shut down. Yes, there were plenty of red states in the beginning that freaked out, just like everybody else, because we didn't know what was going on. And they took that 1 or 2 month pause. All except for South Dakota.
I was just about to say that.
All except South Dakota, but we won't talk about that. That's still a tender issue for me right now. But a lot of red states, Texas, Florida, yes, they shut down, but quickly they reversed course and they reopened. So he keeps trying to point to red states that shut down, but no red state was ever shut down as long as California or as aggressively. So it's apples and bowling balls at this point, Gavin. Yeah. You're trying to compare the two. It's not even close.
Right.
Deeper understanding around mask and mask wearing and N95s, K95s. You go through a process across the spectrum in terms of being prepared, issues related to how we fundamentally address the distribution of vaccines and the prioritization. You want to talk about prioritizations early on. In terms of those vaccines, you go through a series of things. And there's so many things we could have done differently.
You think this country can handle another pandemic, or do you think it would break us?
I think we have to. We're a resilient country, so it wouldn't break us. But I'm not convinced we've learned the lessons from the last one. And I think science took a big hit. I think health.
Yeah, read the history books of 1918. We're still.
What haven't we learned?
Yeah. No, and but that's.
I feel like we've learned a lot since COVID.
He just went on about how everything would be done differently in hindsight, but then we didn't learn the lessons. What? Which lessons?
I think maybe he's trying to say internally for the elites who were in power, they learned how to do things differently next time this happens, so that the rabble rousers and the commoners don't cause any more problems. But you know, maybe the commoners haven't learned as much as they should have about the last pandemic. I think that's the difference.
You're right.
Those in power learned what they should have done differently. Doesn't mean they should have been more like, you know, or less restrictive. It just means they should have changed how they implemented total control. So
divide people.
That's alarming. It should be alarming to all of us that all of a sudden health became partisan. And that's something we're going to pay a big price. You're right, going forward, but it won't break us because we're remarkably resilient.
Speaking of breaking us, you think another 4 years of Donald Trump will break us?
I'm going to skip ahead real quick because we're coming up on an hour and there's still some more I want to get to. Oh, crap. Where did all my stuff go? How does this move around like this? Again, Open invitation. Anybody who wants to be a producer of the California Underground podcast, email us at californiaunderground@protonmail.com. It'll be a good learning experience. I want to skip ahead to him talking more about whether Biden should run or not. Of course.
For all of us across the spectrum.
Filing deadlines haven't passed. President Biden doesn't run. Why shouldn't we consider you a likely
candidate? I think the vice president is naturally one lined up, and the filing deadlines are quickly coming to pass. And I think we need to move past this notion that he's not going to run. President Biden is going to run, and looking forward to getting him reelected. I think there's been so much wallowing in the last few months and hand-wringing in this respect, but we're gearing up for the campaign. We're looking forward to it.
But you hear these calls privately. What do you tell these donors who are wallowing?
Time to move on. Let's go. I'm going to be at the DNC next week in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Was down with the DCC 2 weeks ago down in San Diego. Let's go. Let's make the case. Let's stop. I mean, let's make
what
the case.
What you're saying is you're not plotting
the Biden administration.
There's no plan B for you.
And perhaps there's never been more consistent words that have come out of my mouth than that.
I understand that, but I have something has hit me for a while with you in particular.
Yeah.
Your political hero is Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah.
Bobby, what would Bobby do? Bobby ran.
Yeah.
He did it. Now, you could argue that he waited for somebody else to prove LBJ was vulnerable before jumping in. We could debate the particulars of when. If you're going to go bold, sometimes you go when everybody tells you not to go.
Yeah, I haven't plotted this out.
Here is my general theory. I think we're in alignment on this podcast that Newsom will run for president. Come hell or high water, something's going to happen. I think he's playing the dutiful, loyal little soldier right now. And I think he's saying all the right things, and he's saying the things that a strong Biden supporter should say, which is... Mm-hmm. Masterclass and regaling in the past 2.5 years of absolute unfettered historic success. It's like the revival of FDR. It's just incredible. I think he's saying all this so that he sets himself up as the person that when Biden inevitably doesn't run, whether it's because Hunter's getting indicted and all this stuff comes out about him with business dealings, or age or health, I think it will look to, he'll look like the good guy because they'll be like, we twisted his arm and it was his duty to step up and run and save the country.
Yeah.
It won't look like a selfish, I'm inserting myself into the race because I think I could do a better job and I would be a better president. He's saying all the right things. So he appears like the unwilling or unwitting hero of the Democratic Party.
That's
my theory, is that he's just saying all the right things so that they can go back and be like, oh, he's been plotting this for a while. He wants to be president. I mean, even Chuck Todd is sitting here going like, come on, we know you're getting calls. Donors are saying like, you know, you should be running for president. I mean, Chuck Todd's well-connected in DC. I'm pretty sure that's where Meet the Press is even recorded. I think it's in DC. So he has obviously connections and sources, and he's saying, they're going, come on, we know you're getting mm-hmm. calls from all these donors and people who think you should run. Why aren't you running? So I think that's why he says it like this. So I think even though he unequivocally says, I'm not running for president, I think he says that so that he's set up to run for president when that chance comes.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you mentioned earlier in the episode, the Democrat Party, they do mobilize. Like, we have to give them credit that they're like with this PAC, he's going and helping these other state legislators and gubernatorial candidates and stuff. They mobilize. They support each other. They stand behind each other. So, of course, like, he's going to be Biden's cheerleader. Absolutely. Until you can't cheerlead for Biden anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I had something else I was going to say on that point. We know he like is obsessed with DeSantis and watches DeSantis every move. And DeSantis for so long said, I'm not going to run. And then he, you know, announced he was running, and a bunch of Republicans were like, you said you weren't going to run, and now you turn around and ran. That was a lie. And we see that DeSantis isn't like the number one choice right now. And so I think he like knows he can't do that right now. So he has to wait until he's got the actual opportunity to step in, or wait until the 2028.
Yeah, he's gonna.
But either way, we know.
Yeah, he's trying to make himself look like the unwitting hero. Like, shucks, all right, if you want me to run for president, I guess I will. It's not like I haven't been preparing for this for the past 2.5 years.
Exactly, since the day he was born.
Like, I haven't set up this pack that seems almost oddly familiar to when Obama set up his pack. So, I still think he's running. Also, he says that it's Kamala Harris's job if Biden steps aside. I looked on Real Clear Politics for their average. So those of you who aren't familiar, Real Clear Politics takes a whole average of all the polls of issues and politicians. Kamala Harris right now has a 54.9% unfavorable rating as a Real Clear political average. Massively underwater. So she's not looking too hot. And then even Joe Biden.
There was a dance video.
That might have hurt. Yeah, that was in the past week, so that may have dropped her. And then even Biden right now, Real Clear Politics average, 55.9 unfavorable.
Ooh.
That's really bad. So I think he's worse at this point than Donald Trump was at this point in his presidency. So,
But he's the masterclass. We're still reveling in this first term.
Masterclass. Masterclass of Joe Biden running the country. Yeah. Just an absolute masterclass. It's like he can barely not smile and laugh at this while he's answering. No.
Triggered.
No, I was going to say, you know, what he reluctantly was lieutenant governor. He wanted to be governor at that point. Governor Moonbeam stepped in, and obviously that they cleared the path for him. And yeah, he was like, I think he was like one of the most inactive lieutenant governors. Like, that was why people were upset with him, is he like never showed up to work and he was always out doing other things. But besides the point, when he says I'm a small business guy, I try not to throw up in my mouth. Like, you were not a small business guy. You've been attached to, who was it, Gordon Getty or somebody with the billionaire in the Bay Area. You've always had a silver spoon in your mouth. You've always had connections. You've always had funding. It's not, you're not a pull yourself up from your bootstraps kind of guy who, like, you know, went all in, got a loan, and you know, slept at your winery to make it work. Like, you were pretty much handed a lot of things. So enough of the small business guy stuff. Also, for a guy who says he's a small business guy, going back to the COVID thing, I think you brought this up. We were texting. For being the small business guy, he seemed to destroy and shut down a lot of small businesses for being the small business guy. You'd think he'd empathize and want to help those small businesses get open faster, but he didn't. So I can't stand when he says he's the small business guy. Fact check.
Where's sound bite for that? You need a little sound effect.
I know. We need a fact check sound bite. Again, if you want to be a producer on the California Underground at protonmail.com. Okay. So from the Cato Institute, this was pretty recent. This is actually the most recent article about it because all the other puff pieces were from last year. But this was actually from April 5th in 2023. No, California is not the world's fourth largest economy. It says the latest California GDP data published by the Bureau of Economic Analysis places the size of California's economy at $3.701 trillion as of the fourth quarter of 2022. Official German data from the Statistische Bundesamt show that 2022 GDP totals $4.125 trillion in U.S. dollars. The gap may continue to grow.
That's a big gap.
That's a huge gap. Yeah, that's not a tiny gap. That's a sizable gap.
Trillion.
So how did anyone get the idea that California had passed California? It originated with a Bloomberg opinion piece entitled California Poised to Overtake Germany as the World's Number Four Economy by Matt Winkler. And that was what, if you look at all these articles, if you Google like California fourth largest economy, they all just cite to this one article. In the October 24, 2022 article, Winkler only claimed that California was about to pass Germany and not that it had already done so. To quote Winkler, the margin of Germany's nominal GDP of $4.22 trillion over California's $3.357 trillion last year was the smallest on record and is about to disappear, with Europe's largest economy barely growing in 2022 and forecast to shrink in 2023. However, since Winkler's piece appeared, emerging cracks in California's economy widened, with major tech industry layoffs, the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, and the decreased income tax revenue collections. The dollar has also declined against the euro. Although Germany's economy has been largely stagnant in recent quarters, the country does have one thing going for it, a bump in population. While California's population has been shrinking in the 2020 to an estimated 39 million, Germany has now surpassed 84 million residents, due in part to immigration from Ukraine. Let's see. In a recent tweet, California's first partner, Jennifer Sebille Newsom, stated, as the fourth largest economy in the world, California wields significant market influence. So, not true, not the fourth largest, not closing in the gap. So, yeah, fact check. I feel like we need another sound check. It's like fact checked. Zach Dell is not part of the interview. That is an ad from YouTube. Kara Court is, and for those who don't understand what really is happening, Kara Court is using the conservatorship process where anybody can claim, file a petition for conservatorship over someone, and take their rights away. Also, it will allow those who are arrested, whether they want to go into, whether they want to go to jail or they want to go into treatment. So, for those who don't know what Kara Court is, that's basically what's happening. And they've been trying to crack conservatorships and make it so that anybody can just claim conservatorships and the state can claim a conservatorship over you and throw you in a mental institution.
And that's coming this month.
That's starting October 2nd. So we'll see how that rolls out. In my personal practice, I actually do conservatorships, court-appointed conservatorships, and we still have no idea how any of this is rolling out. So we haven't gotten any updates from the state. This is supposed to happen in 2 weeks already, and no one has any idea what's happening.
Okay.
Actually, it's been about $20 billion, and homelessness has only gotten worse since Newsom spent that money. So it's a pre-existing condition that you have failed to solve and only made it worse.
Right. He's had how many years now?
His
governor?
This will be his fifth year, right?
His fifth year. California accounts for 12% of the United States population, but 30% of the United States homeless population.
That seems like a big percentage.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, pause.
Mm-hmm.
He claims affordability is a big issue. I don't doubt that, but he's not doing anything to make gas more affordable.
No.
And then now he brings up fentanyl, and yet, you know, he went in there with SB 14, which we've talked about many, many times, where he was like, you, that which a Republican bill, and he went in and was like, you guys are going to pass this, after it didn't pass, and he made a big stink about that. And then of course he was the hero of SB 14. He didn't do that with these fentanyl bills.
Mm-mm. No, it was only because there was a public outcry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we just did that episode 2 weeks ago about fentanyl.
Yeah.
And the fentanyl crisis is out of control here. And he hasn't. Well, he did increase the National Guard at the border 50%. So we have to give him credit for that.
Yes.
So
you're right.
For those of you who heard the last episode, you'll know why that's not that impressive of a number. But yeah, I mean, it seems like he's not really taking credit for any of this. That he's basically saying, I haven't solved any of this. We've thrown a ton of money at it, but it hasn't gotten better. And I can't seem to solve anything. I mean, like you said, to your point, gas is more expensive, housing is more expensive. Just wait until they require all trucks, all semi trucks, to be electric. And it sounded like someone threw something out our window. Wait until they want all semi trucks to be electric, forcing the cost on those who are driving trucks and delivering our goods to go skyrocketing, because then they have to pay double or triple for these trucks, and then they have to charge the trucks, and then that slows down how much they can actually get here. Wait until your groceries are delivered by those trucks and see how expensive they are. So yeah. Nothing's getting more affordable in California. So yeah, affordability is an issue.
Gavin. Didn't you just something too about your San Diego water bill?
Oh yeah, increase. Yeah, San Diego. Well, this isn't really Newsom's fault, but San Diego, is gonna we're gonna see water costs rise by 20% in the next couple of years.
But it is coming, like the whole water thing. That is a Sacramento issue.
That'll be the next thing.
I know, like my city is dealing with. They're raising all their little taxes and rates, and it's of course coming to all of us in our water bills. Like where I live, we've definitely been dealing with that. And I actually know he's not now, but he was the head of the board of the water district in my area. And so I would ask him, I'm like, well, what's going on here? And he would tell me, and he would go to Sacramento and like talk to people, you know, and he's like, here's what's coming out of Sacramento. This is why you're just to have the water connection was like increasing like crazy. Like you didn't use a drop of water, but you were paying just to have access to it like crazy. So,
yeah. Fact check. This was from the Center Square in Florida. How Florida's homelessness problem compares to the nation. This was an article this year. And based on their rankings, California is the top. That's not surprising. Homeless individuals without shelter, 67%. Total homeless population in 2022 is 171,000. So change in homelessness has gone up in California. While not great, Florida is number 11. So
that's a big difference of three.
That's a huge difference in three. Their homeless individuals without shelter is 45.2. Their homeless population is 25,959. And actually, according to their statistics, it's gone down. Change in homelessness from 2010 to 2022 has gone down 54.9%. In that same time span, California has gone up 38.9%.
Oh, wow.
That's a huge difference. So
that is a huge difference.
No, Newsom. Florida is not number three. And in fact, they've done an incredible job of reducing the amount of homelessness in their state. In fact, actually, most of the ones in the top 10 before Florida have all reduced their homelessness. I don't know what they're doing with them. Mississippi is number two, but they've reduced it in the past 10 years, 56.4%. Georgia has reduced theirs, 46.1%. Texas has reduced theirs, 30%. So those are huge numbers. And red states, for all the crap he gives to red states, they seem to be figuring out how to solve homelessness in like huge leaps and bounds. Meanwhile, California is going the complete opposite direction. So
are they solving it, or are the homeless people coming here?
It's either that, or they're just putting them on catapults and throwing them into the ocean. I don't know. That's a joke for everybody who doesn't know.
Sick joke, though.
That's a joke. That's a joke. We shouldn't be putting homeless people on catapults and throwing them into the ocean. Yeah, I don't know how they're doing it, but yeah, that's a lot of red states that are reducing it. I don't know. Maybe they are sending them here, and maybe that's why the number is. But either way, Florida is not number three, and he likes to bash Florida. But in that case, he is completely wrong. So we got a couple more minutes here. We're already 15 minutes over our hour, but
I'll stop talking.
I'm going to stop it there because I think the fact that he says, we can stop sharing the screen now. The fact that he says affordability has been a original sin of California. Like, yeah, I get it. People want to live in California. It's nice here. You know, you want to live in San Diego. People want to live in Orange County. People want to live in these places. They're very nice places to live. I've always had this theory that if California was landlocked and had the weather of like North Dakota, they wouldn't be able to get away with all this stuff because they wouldn't have the beautiful lands and ocean and shores and weather and all that stuff to lure people here so that they could look past all the horrible policies. With that said, he talks about affordability as the original sin of California, yet nothing has been done about it. They are now suing gas companies because they think that they're hiding stuff on their carbon footprint. They want them to do these profit windfall taxes, which didn't pass, thankfully. They want to keep demonizing gas companies, gas and oil companies, while gas now is closing in on $7 a gallon. They supported CEQA, which prevents people from building affordable housing. So you can't say affordability is the original sin of California and then do quite literally the opposite of everything to make California more affordable. That's all these pipe dreams about carbon emissions and climate change and all that stuff. You have to choose one or the other. Do you want to achieve all these lofty goals so you look good at the UN? Or do you want to make it more affordable to live here in California? Because a lot of this stuff that happens here in California, why we're paying so much for everything, is not just because of natural outside macroeconomics. It's a lot of it to do with California policies. So he can say that all he wants. It's still not affordable. So what are your thoughts?
I agree. And I don't know what his platform was when he ran for governor initially, but if he's saying that this, you know, this is the original sin, then didn't he come into the governorship knowing that that should be tackled firsthand? Like, shouldn't that have been a priority right off the bat?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that should be something. I think California Republicans now, thanks to the younger core of those in the state legislature, are starting to grapple and start to get their hands around this and make this sort of the core of their policy, which is great. Affordability at the end of the day is kitchen table politics. And, you know, people don't care if the food that they're eating on, you know, and putting on the table to feed their families was delivered with a truck that was run by diesel or was run by electric. They just don't care. They want to be able to feed their family. They want to be able to go to bed and make sure their kids are well fed. They want to be able to keep the lights on. They want to be able to heat their home when it's cold and maybe turn on the air conditioning when it gets hot and run some water when they want it. People just don't care. And I think that's could be one of the core tenets of any sort of opposition party is affordability. Make California affordable again. Not to borrow the Trump saying, but I mean, that's basically the theory that should be going forward is make California affordable again so that people can live here and enjoy themselves. Not mm-hmm. going to say it's ever going to be super affordable. It's never going to be right. Like a lot of other places because people do want to live here. There's high demand to live here. But for him to claim that's the original sin of California and he's done literally everything the opposite to make it even worse, just goes to show you that they don't really care about solutions. They care about platitudes and making it sound great. And that's just Newsom in a nutshell. So,
yeah.
But final thoughts on Newsom and this interview before we sign off for the night.
Let me check my notes. I think I kind of said what I wanted to say. I don't think we showed it. There was at like 13 minutes, like 13 and a half minutes into it, he talks about DeSantis is the ultimate authoritarian. And I'm like, no. That's you. Mm-hmm. Anyone that wants to go back and watch that, he does kind of, again, just another dig at DeSantis and is like, no, it's you. You're not looking at DeSantis. You're looking at a mirror. Mm-hmm. And it did annoy me that he just can't answer a question about California without bringing up another state. I know I mentioned that earlier. I think that's it.
Yeah, I think after that part of the interview, it just kind of went into softballs. He asked about Dianne Feinstein. Why is she still senator if she needs someone to run her financial affairs with power of attorney? It's a great question. My answer is because we are at the federal level, we no longer have representatives. We have nobility families like medieval times, lords and ladies. That's really where we're at. It's all about names and royal families. So that's why Feinstein's not stepping down.
Which, of course, he just deflected again on that. and talked about how he's had this long-term relationship with her and she's just so great. And she's like family.
Yeah. So
which was not an answer to the question.
Basically it was like, oh, I interned with her and now I'm governor of California. It's like, well, maybe that's a good argument for term limits. If you interned with her and now you're governor of California. So that's a long stretch of time. So yeah, that's basically that episode, that interview. I don't know if we'll do the Dana Bash one. I think Camille's probably gonna need some time to recuperate after this one. We can't do too many Newsom interviews in a row. Well, it melts our brains.
Any more hate talks?
Wait till we do the one where he talks to the UN about climate change. Boy, our heads will really melt on that one. That's right. He's giving a speech to the UN on climate change and all that stuff. So that one should be fun. But anyway. We went a little bit over, but that's fine because we like to provide you guys with the good content and there was a lot to talk about on this one. So, next week, the 29th, if you're at California GOP convention, you just happen to come by, say hi. Also make sure you tune in live to that episode. It's going to be a great episode. It's going to be, I don't know, 3 hours long. We're trying to shoot for like 3 hours long.
It might be broken up into pieces.
Yeah, it might be broken up, but we're trying to. It's going to be like a block of like 3 hours. We're going to be live streaming.
We're going to all the things. So then we're like interviewing and streaming in between.
Yeah. So we're trying to do as much as possible.
Any gossip that we learn, we'll try to share.
Yeah. So if you want a live look into what a California GOP convention is like, this is going to be your chance because we're going to be live streaming. We'll be there. Not like radio, like, we'll have a camera set up. Everything's going to be, you know, so we're going to be giving you the scoop as it's happening at the convention. All right. And with that said, as I end every episode, if you like this episode, make sure you like, share, subscribe, review, leave a comment for the algorithm. Best thing you can do to support this show that is absolutely free is you can share this with somebody else who would be interested in California politics. And with that, we'll sign off for the night. Everyone have a good night. Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it, and follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.